You're listening to The Pulse
on University Radio Nottingham.
Welcome to the Friday Pulse here at 5pm from URN. Today we are going to be discussing something quite deep and topical, so I would like to give a disclaimer before we begin, in that we'll be discussing topics of sexual harassment, abuse, and sexism and homophobia. So if that is something that makes you feel uncomfortable, it is okay if you don't want to stay tuned in, but we'd love to have you back next Friday as well. Our first article that we're discussing today is about David Carrick. Serial rapist and former police officer David Carrick has been given 36 life sentences and will serve more than 30 years in prison for crimes spanning almost two decades. Carrick, an officer with the Metropolitan Police, was first interviewed in October 2021 after he had been arrested by police in Hertfordshire following a rape complaint from a woman who he had met on a dating website. The woman described how, at their first meeting the year before, he had plied her with a drink and attacked her in a hotel room. Once Carrick, who lived in Stevenage but grew up in Wiltshire, was finally charged, DCI Moore says he thought that there's got to be something else out there, and there was. The investigation quickly snowballed, he says. Carrick's name was reported in the media following his first court appearance, after which calls started coming in from other women he had raped and abused over many years. My first question to you all is, what are your thoughts on how Carrick was able to go unnoticed for so many years without being caught, and how he was able to assault so many women without the police actually doing something about it?
I mean, I think you know, as we've seen in the Met for the past a few years, a lot more scandals have been coming out. I think it's definitely possibly a showcase of how things possibly may be ever so slightly improving the Met, but it also highlights the fact that these things have been going on so long, they've been covered up for so long, and only recently they've come out. It's shown sort of the poor leadership that's been there to sort of avoid rooting out. You know, Cressida Dick resigned shortly after the Sarah Everard case, and I think it's a systematic issue of, you know, the Met protecting its own. It's this sort of culture that's been allowed to develop in the policing service that should have been cut out decades ago, but is now only now coming to light.
Yeah, I would unfortunately agree entirely that it feels rather like a systemic problem with the police itself, as many female police officers have recently come out to say how the work environment still has that more rape culture kind of feel, even when you're supposed to be working in law enforcement, which naturally is never a good environment anyway for any work environment, let alone when you are working with the law and dealing with people who should not only, well, they do know better. Not only do they know better because they're upholding the law, they're meant to be showing you how to uphold the law. That's kind of part of their job, is showing you the right thing to do. So when not only they can get away with behavior like that in the workspace, they can get away with behavior and atrocities such as this. It just sets not only the wrong example, it sets a precedent for the general public to assume that the police are essentially lazy and ignoring any problems within their ranks, which they may well be.
I think not only does it suggest to the public that the police are lazy and ignoring issues, which I think is true, I think worse than that, to be honest, I think, like, you know, as a woman hearing all of this come out, I don't feel safe contacting the police. I don't trust them to protect me. It's, you know, not only do you kind of think they're a bit bad at their jobs in a sort of bureaucratic sense, I think it means that everyone, but particularly women, aren't going to trust them and aren't going to trust that they're going to be protected. And it's such a fundamental failing of their entire raison d'etre that just, like, it's aggravating that this keeps happening.
I think the point there as well is that I think a lot of these police officers were able to do a lot of the things they did because they abused their position of trust in the first place. I think a lot of people, like, even outside of their official duties, they'd be maybe instinctively a bit trusting towards someone who's, you know, an officer of the law. But yeah, I think that's definitely been shaken up now. And while, okay, this may mean some people stay away from the more dangerous characters in the police force, I think it's also going to risk a lot of crimes maybe not being dealt with in the same way, or, you know, a lot of people just not feeling safe going out in certain areas or at certain times, even more so. So that's definitely something to look at.
So to clarify more on the lack of faith and the distrust towards the police that has grown, articles by the BBC and investigations going on currently discovered that nearly 15,000 allegations were made about Met police officers and staff last year, so that's 2022. These allegations included racism, harassment, sexism and homophobia. What are your guys' feelings towards the fact that many of these allegations were, as the Met said, the vast majority were just related to low-level conduct? And how do you feel over the fact that there was not many changes made to how police officers were kind of given their positions or any big disciplinary actions given to them until the kind of massive snowballing since the David Carrick case?
I mean, I think, again, the biggest issue just is the fact that everything feels like the police are a bit complacent, because at the end of the day, if someone's committed a crime, who are meant to deal with that? The police. If a policeman has committed a crime, a policewoman, a police officer has committed a crime, who deals with that? Still the police. And yet that hasn't happened until it's become a massive public scandal. Yet again, it just feels like further evidence that the police are either complacent and willing to let stuff go ignored if they have evidence, or won't do a proper investigation so that they don't have the evidence to prosecute fully. And frankly, I don't know which it would be. Neither is great. So, yeah, it feels like the police are just either willingly ignoring stuff or deliberately misusing and doing a crap job.
I think also, like, you mentioned that one of their comments was that a lot of it was low-level crime. I don't care how low-level it is. If you are an officer of the law, if you are, you know, someone that works in the police, like, you shouldn't be doing anything like that. You shouldn't even be touching that kind of behaviour. And it just contributes to this culture that I think has obviously been festering in the Met and potentially, you know, in the police force across the country for a long, long time, that, you know, it is a snowball effect. You allow someone to get away with something low level. Someone thinks, oh, well, I can do that as well. And if I can get away with that, then I can get away with this other thing. And then you end up with things like, you know, horrible, horrible people like Wayne Cousins or David Carrick getting away with what they got. Well, I mean, I know they haven't got away with it, but for a long time they felt empowered to do what they did. And, you know, the Met Police has a history of sort of closing ranks and saying, oh, you know, it's a bad apple, it's only one bad apple. It's 15,000 bad apples, clearly. So
just to kind of put that figure into perspective, the 15,000 allegations were made, and currently in the Met Police there are around 32,000 officers. Say if all of those allegations were made against individual officers, so 15,000 officers, that's around half of the police force in London. So
I was just gonna make a point based on what Jake said about sort of the willingly ignoring things. I remember seeing at the end of last year, there was a watchdog, the HM Inspectorate of Constabulary and Fire and Rescue Services did a sort of review of the police force at large and found that hundreds, if not thousands, of police officers who should have failed vetting checks may be serving in England and Wales, with criminal behaviour dismissed as a one-off, with applicants with links to extensive criminality in their families hired as police officers. It shows 131 cases where inspectors said vetting decisions were questionable, and 68 in which the investigators disagreed entirely with the vetting process. Obviously, this is a small sample, but when you blow this up, especially considering, you know, the large drive in police, like, hiring that the government has been wanting to do, you know, thousands more police officers on the street, if they are already willingly ignoring a lot of the vetting processes, and now there's this attempt to sort of step up hiring, I can't picture how much more lax the vetting process could get. But if it's like this already, I worry about how far it could still go.
Currently, the Met Police are looking for around 1,000 new officers, and they have reduced the grade boundaries and criteria required for people to apply, as what they've said is a move to make a more diverse police force. Passing to the floor again for all of you guys, do you have any thoughts on what I've just mentioned or what Connor has?
I think that what you've just said is definitely a problem, because as a country we already have sort of less average police training time than a lot of other major European countries, even America, I think, but I can't remember the exact numbers. So I think lowering our standards is definitely not going to get us out of this hole. Another thing I'd say is I'd probably question the stats for exactly how many of these allegations there are, because I think a lot of them will be unreported as well. I think there's, because of that closing ranks culture, a lot of people probably just aren't aware that they can report the police for a crime, or they don't feel that anything's going to happen. So I think especially for some of the severe ones, or even the minor ones across the board, I think the numbers would probably be a lot higher than there are official allegations.
Again, unfortunately, I think to come back to your point, Cora, about the lowering of the grade boundaries to get in, it feels a little bit like, oh no, our reputation's gone a bit down the drain. A lot of people won't want to join the police for one reason or another, whether it's the reputation or just it's not for them, or there's been different jobs, etc. So by lowering the grade boundaries, they open it up to more people, and that allows them to recruit more, because frankly they're probably not getting enough applicants due to all the issues that are surrounding the police currently, and they need the applicants. But whilst it's, you know, it's a good way to get numbers in, what are you going to do when you also lower the grade boundaries? Are you also going to potentially lower the fitness? Are you going to lower the test like scores in the police? So it feels a little bit like this is a stupid move regardless, because either you're going to have people go through the academy who don't pass, or you've got to lower the boundaries to pass in the academy. And then what happens after that? Do you have worse? Do you have sloppy police officers? Do you have a worse kind of work environment? I'd be interested to find out.
Just to kind of bring the conversation back to the subject of sexual violence, 1 in 6 men across England and Wales experience sexual assault or abuse, and 1 in 5 women experience sexual assault or abuse. And I just kind of wanted to get your guys' thoughts on how comfortable you would feel going to the police to report any abuse, hypothetically, you would experience, if, like, considering all of these complaints and allegations that have been made against the Met Police.
I personally wouldn't feel at all comfortable. I think, arguably, I can't obviously say, but I think I would probably feel even less comfortable if I was a woman going to the police in the current scenario, the current climate. But certainly I still would absolutely not feel comfortable going to the police, because it feels right now that it would be trivialised or joked about to go as a man and get sexually assaulted and then go to the police. It feels like they would laugh about it at some point, or they would completely ignore the complaint and not deal with it if they can, wash their hands of it even.
I completely agree with you. I think you make a really good point about how it would be easy for them to trivialise it if it was a man going as well, because there's already that as an existing problem, the perception that men can't be sexually assaulted, which is obviously a load of rubbish. But also, as a woman, absolutely not. I would not go to the police. I would not feel comfortable going to the police. I think it's been proven time and time and time again that the process of reporting rape or sexual assault is extremely traumatic. The process of trying to, you know, God forbid, get a prosecution for someone is extremely protracted and traumatic for the victim, and often results in nothing except, yeah, a traumatic process where victims are disbelieved over and over and over again. It's a completely broken system and process for it. And, you know, even if this wasn't the case, if you thought that all of the individual police officers were angels and would take you seriously, even, you know, which obviously they're not, but even if they were, there is just a fundamental issue with the way reporting and prosecution of sexual assault and violence is handled.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the time, even someone who is, you know, confident enough to go and actually open up about it, they might take a few interviews, get a few things on record, but a lot of the time this doesn't result in any meaningful action in the long term. Maybe you'll get a restraining order if you're lucky, but I think the amount of prosecutions in this area is really low, and for me, definitely, I think that would undermine my faith that anything would actually get done in the majority of cases, unless there was like like a wealth of undeniable evidence, which a lot of people don't have, because, you know, these things a lot of the time happen in areas where it's not easy to prove what you've experienced. So yeah, I think I definitely agree with both of you there that I don't think it would be taken seriously, and even if it were, I don't think anything would necessarily come of it.
I believe it's something like literally 99% of allegations do not result in prosecution. So I mean, it really does just feel like kind of a brick wall.
I think to clarify on that, I saw a stat a little while ago, admittedly. Out of 1,000 rape cases, there would be 16 reported. There would be 8 where the police do something that's somewhat significant. 4 would go to court and 2 would be prosecuted.
Yeah.
Out of 1,000. And there would be 1 false rape allegation as well, which is a side note that a lot of people make a point of, oh, false rape allegations are a massive deal. They are not. There are less of those than there are prosecuted rape cases, and there are less prosecuted rape cases than there are a lot of other things. It's not good. It is a horrific system when 0.2% of cases go to a prosecution, and you know, over almost 90% don't even get reported. 99% even don't get reported.
And just to kind of reel us in before we go for a break, if anyone listening has experienced sexual assault or abuse or knows someone who has, there are numerous helplines that you can contact, and there are numerous services you could get in touch with. There's the 24/7 helpline that you can contact. I think it's run by Rape Crisis. If you go to www.rapecrisis.org.uk, you can get all the information about their helpline and other services they provide, and that's available to anyone, pretty much, regardless of gender, race, sexuality and whatnot. There's also the National Male Survivor Helpline, which provides dedicated support to male survivors of sexual abuse and those who support them. That is ran by Safeline, where you can go to their website. They provide other services as well, such as an online and telephone counselling service for anyone over the age of 16, and also a Warwickshire and Coventry dedicated one. If you're more located to Nottingham, there's also services like the Topaz Centre. There's Nottingham Rape Crisis as well. So please do get in touch with support services that are there to support you, pretty much.
I think I'd just like to chime in. We have obviously taken quite a heavy negative tone with this, and I think, you know, I don't want what we say here to put off people from reporting it if that's what they want to do. But like you say, Cora, there are lots and lots of organisations that are there to support you if you don't feel comfortable going to the police, which is obviously not a situation anyone wants to be in, but there are alternatives. So yeah, I think I just want to underline, not, you know, much as it's a difficult situation, there are alternative avenues of support.
And fundamentally, if you think it is the right thing to do, report it to the police.
Absolutely.
Worst case scenario is nothing happens, but that is not a worse scenario than you were in before. It's annoying, but it doesn't mean you are in a worse position. So I would say if you do feel comfortable, it is still worth reporting it, because this, you know, compared to not reporting it, you can't get anything fixed. If you report it, something might happen. So there's always a shout.
Thank you, Kit and John, for those last remarks on the topic of if you are feeling apprehensive about reporting to the police. A lot of services also provide independent sexual violence advocates who will give you advice, who will support you throughout the reporting process. And kind of, if you're not very comfortable with reporting to start with, they can help you start to feel more comfortable and take it at your own pace. So services like Rape Crisis and Safeline again provide independent sexual violence advocates. So please do get in touch with those.
You're listening to The Pulse on University Radio Nottingham.